Clever Rex North. There is a certain freedom in marrying a man when you aren't hiding anything. Celia was gone. I wasn't really at a place in my life where I could fall in love with anyone, and Rex wasn't the type of man who seemed capable of falling in love at all. Maybe if we'd met at different times in our lives, we might have hit it off. But with things as they were, Rex and I had a relationship built entirely on box office. It was tacky and fake and manipulative, but it was the beginning of my millions. It was also how I got Celia to come back to me. And it was one of the most honest deals I've ever made with anybody. I think I will always love Rex North a little bit because of all that.
"So you're never going to sleep with me," Rex said.
He was sitting in my living room with one leg casually crossed over the other, drinking a Manhattan. He was wearing a black suit with a thin tie. His blonde hair was slicked back. It made his blue eyes look even brighter, with nothing in their way. Rex was the kind of guy who was so beautiful, it was nearly boring. And then he smiled, and you watched every girl in the room faint. Perfect teeth, two shallow dimples, a slight arch of the eyebrow, and everybody was done for. Like me, he'd been made by the studios. Born Carl Olverson in Iceland, he hightailed it to Hollywood, changed his name, perfected his accent, and slept with everybody he needed to sleep with to get what he wanted. He was a matinee idol with a chip on his shoulder about proving he could act. But he actually could act. He felt underestimated because he was underestimated. Anna Karenina was his chance to be taken seriously. He needed it to be a big hit just as much as I did, which was why he was willing to do exactly what I was willing to do, a marriage stunt. Rex was pragmatic and never precious. He saw 10 steps ahead but never let on what he was thinking. We were kindred spirits in that regard. I sat down next to him on my living room sofa, my arm resting behind him. "I can't say for sure I'd never sleep with you," I said. "It was the truth. You're handsome. I could see myself falling for your shtick once or twice." Rex laughed. He always had a detached sense about him, like you could do whatever you wanted and you wouldn't get under his skin. He was untouchable in that way.
"I mean, can you say for certain that you'd never fall in love with me?" I asked. "What if you end up wanting to make this a real marriage? That would be uncomfortable for everyone."
"You know, if any woman could do it, it would make sense that it was Evelyn Hugo. I suppose there's always a chance."
"That's how I feel about sleeping with you," I said. "There's always a chance."
I grabbed my Gibson off the coffee table and drank a sip. Rex laughed. "Tell me then, where will we live?"
"Good question."
"My house is in the Bird Streets, with floor-to-ceiling windows. It's a pain in the ass to get out of the driveway, but you can see the whole canyon from my pool."
"That's fine," I said. "I don't mind moving to your place for a little while. I'm shooting another movie in a month or so over at Columbia, so your place will be closer anyway. The only thing I insist on is that I can bring Luisa."
After Celia left, I could hire help again. After all, there was no longer anyone hiding in my bedroom. Luisa was from El Salvador, just a few years younger than I was. The first day she came to work for me, she was talking to her mother on the phone during her lunch break. She was speaking in Spanish right in front of me. "La señora es tan bonita, pero loca." This lady is beautiful, but crazy. I turned and looked at her, and I said, "Disculpe, yo te puedo entender." "Excuse me, I can understand you." Luisa's eyes went wide, and she hung up the phone on her mother and said to me, "Lo siento, no sabía que usted hablaba español. I'm sorry, I didn't know you spoke Spanish." I switched to English, not wanting to speak Spanish anymore, not liking how strange it sounded coming out of my own mouth. "I'm Cuban," I said to her. "I've spoken Spanish my entire life." That wasn't true, though. I hadn't spoken it in years.
She looked at me as if I were a painting she was interpreting, and then she said apologetically, "You do not look Cuban."
"Pues lo soy," I said haughtily. "Well, I am."
Luisa nodded and packed up her lunch, moving on to change the bed linens. I sat at that table for at least a half hour, reeling. I kept thinking, how dare she try to take my own identity away from me? But as I looked around my house, seeing no pictures of my family, not a single Latin American book, stray blonde hairs in my hairbrush, not even a jar of cumin in my spice rack, I realized Luisa hadn't done that to me. I had done it to me. I'd made the choice to be different from my true self. Fidel Castro had control of Cuba. Eisenhower had already put the economic embargo in place by that point. The Bay of Pigs had been a disaster. Being a Cuban American was complicated, and instead of trying to make my way in the world as a Cuban woman, I simply forsook where I came from. In some ways, this helped me release any remaining ties connecting me to my father, but it also pulled me further away from my mother. My mother, whom this had all been for at some point. That was all me. All the results of my own choices. None of that was Luisa's fault. So I realized I had no right to sit at my own kitchen table blaming her. When she left that night, I could tell she still felt uncomfortable around me. So I made sure to smile sincerely and tell her I was excited to see her the next day. From that day forward, I never spoke Spanish to her. I was too embarrassed, too insecure of my disloyalty. But she spoke it from time to time, and I smiled when she made jokes to her mother within earshot. I let her know I understood her, and I quickly grew to care for her very much. I envied how secure she was in her own skin, how unafraid she was to be her true self. She was proud to be Luisa Jimenez. She was the first employee I ever had whom I cherished. I was not going to move house without her.
"I'm sure she's great," Rex said. "Bring her.
Now, practically speaking, do we sleep in the same bed?" "I doubt it's necessary. Luisa will be discreet. I've learned that lesson before. And we'll just throw parties a few times a year and make it look like we live in the same room."
"And I can still do what I do?"
"You can still sleep with every woman on the planet, yes."
"Every woman except my wife," Rex said, smiling and taking another sip of his drink.
"You just can't get caught." Rex waved me off as if my worry wasn't a concern. "I'm serious, Rex. Cheating on me is a big story. I can't have that."
"You don't have to worry," Rex said.
He was more sincere about that than anything else I'd asked of him, maybe more than any scene in Anna Karenina. "I would never do anything to make you look foolish. We're in this together."
"Thank you," I said.
"That means a lot. That goes for me, too. What I do won't be your problem, I promise you." Rex put out his hand and I shook it.
"Well, I should be going," he said, checking his watch. "I have a date with a particularly eager young lady, and I'd hate to keep her waiting." He buttoned his coat as I stood up.
"When should we tie the knot?" he asked. "I think we should probably be seen around town a few times this coming week, and keep it going for a little while. Maybe put a ring on my finger around November?" Harry suggested the big day could be about 2 weeks before the film hits theaters.
"Shock everybody, and get them talking about the movie.
The fact that I'm Vronsky and you're Anna makes the whole thing seem tawdry when our marriage will make it seem legitimate."
"It's both dirty and clean," Rex said.
"Exactly."
"That's your bread and butter," he said.
"Yours too."
"Nonsense," Rex said. "I am dirty through and through."
I walked with him to the front door and hugged him goodbye. As he stood in the open doorway, he asked, "Have you seen the latest edit? Is it good?"
"It's fantastic," I said, "but it's almost 3 hours long. If we're going to get people to buy a ticket..."
"We have to put on a show," he said.
Precisely.
But we're good in it, me and you.
We're absolutely dynamite.
Photo moment, November 26, 1962. Evelyn Hugo and Rex North hitched. Evelyn Hugo's at it again, and this time we think she's outdone herself. Evelyn and Rex North tied the knot last weekend at North's estate in the Hollywood Hills. The two met during the filming of the upcoming Anna Karenina and are said to have fallen in love instantly, smitten with each other even during rehearsals. These two blonde lovers are sure to heat up theaters in the coming weeks as Anna and Count Vronsky. This is the first marriage for Rex, although Evelyn has a couple of failed marriages behind her. This year, her famous ex, Don Adler, is separating from hat trick star Ruby Riley. With a brand new movie, a star-studded wedding, and two mansions between them, surely Evelyn and Rex are having the time of their lives. Photo moment, December 10, 1962. Celia St. James engaged to quarterback John Braverman. Superstar Celia St. James has been on a hot streak lately in the film department with her period drama Royal Wedding and her stunning turn in the musical Celebration. And now she has even more to celebrate because she's found love with New York Giants QB John Braverman. The two have been spotted in Los Angeles and Manhattan, dining out and enjoying each other's company. Here's hoping Celia turns out to be a good luck charm for Braverman. That big diamond on her finger has sure got to feel like a good luck charm for her.
Hollywood Digest, December 17, 1962. Anna Karenina wins big at the box office. The eagerly awaited Anna Karenina sailed into theaters this Friday and took the weekend. With rave reviews for both Evelyn Hugo and Rex North, it's no wonder audiences are flocking to the film. Between the world-class performances and the chemistry both on and off screen, excitement for the movie has reached a fever pitch. People are saying a pair of Oscars might be just the perfect wedding gift for the newlyweds. As a producer on the film, Evelyn stands to make boffo numbers off the box office. Brava, Hugo.
The night of the Academy Awards, Rex and I sat next to each other, holding hands, allowing everyone a glimpse of the romantic marriage we were peddling around town. We both smiled politely when we lost, clapping for the winners. I was disappointed, but not surprised. It seemed a little too good to be true, the idea of Oscars for people like Rex and me, beautiful movie stars trying to prove they had substance. I got the distinct impression that a lot of people wanted us to stay in our lane, so we took it in stride and then partied the night away, the two of us drinking and dancing until the wee hours. Celia wasn't at the awards that year, and despite the fact that I searched for her at every party Rex and I went to, I didn't lay eyes on her. Instead, Rex and I painted the town red. At the William Morris party, I found Harry and dragged him into a quiet corner, where the two of us sipped champagne and talked about how wealthy we were going to be. You should know this about the rich. They always want to get richer. It is never boring getting your hands on more money. When I was a child, trying to find something to eat for dinner besides the old rice and dry beans in the kitchen, I would tell myself that if I could just have a good meal every night, I'd be happy. When I was at Sunset Studios, I told myself all I wanted was a mansion. When I got the mansion, I told myself all I wanted was two houses and a team of help. Here I was, just turned 25, already realizing that no amount would ever really be enough. Rex and I went home at around 5 in the morning, the two of us downright drunk. As our car drove away, I searched my purse for keys to the house, and Rex stood beside me, breathing his sour gin breath down my neck.
My wife can't find the keys, Rex said, stumbling ever so slightly. She's trying very hard, but she can't seem to find them.
Would you be quiet, I said. Do you want to wake the neighbors?
What are they going to do, Rex said, even louder than before. Kick us out of town? Is that what they will do, my precious Evelyn? Will they tell us we can't live on Blue Jay Way anymore? Will they make us move to Robin Drive or Oriole Lane?
I found the keys, put them in the door, and turned the knob. The two of us fell inside. I said goodnight to Rex and went to my room. I took off my dress alone, without anyone there to unzip the back of it. The loneliness of my marriage hit harder in that moment than it ever had. I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror and could see, in no uncertain terms, that I was beautiful. But it didn't mean anyone loved me. I stood in my slip and looked at my brassy blonde hair and my dark brown eyes and my straight, thick eyebrows. And I missed the woman who should have been my wife. I missed Celia. My mind reeled with the thought that she might be with John Braverman that very moment. I knew better than to believe any of it, but I also feared that I didn't know her the way I thought I did. Did she love him? Had she forgotten me? Tears welled in my eyes as I thought about her red hair that used to fan across my pillows. There, there, Rex said from behind me. I turned around to see him standing in the doorway. He had taken off his tux jacket and undone his cufflinks. His shirt was half-buttoned, his bow tie undone, hanging on either side of his neck. It was the very sight that millions of women across the nation would have killed for. I thought you went to bed, I said. If I'd known you were up, I'd have had you help me get my dress off. I would have liked that. I waved him off. What are you doing? Can't sleep? Haven't tried. He walked farther into the room, closer to me. We'll try, then. It's late. At this rate, the two of us will be asleep until evening. Think about it, Evelyn, he said. The lights streaming in through the windows lit his blonde hair. His dimples glowed. Think about what? Think about what it would be like. He moved closer to me and put his hand on my waist. He stood behind me, his breath once again on my neck. It felt good to be touched by him. Movie stars are movie stars are movie stars. Sure, we all fade after a while. We are human, full of flaws like anyone else. But we are the chosen ones because we are extraordinary. And there is nothing an extraordinary person likes more than someone else extraordinary. Rex, Evelyn, he said, whispering into my ear, just once. Shouldn't we? No, I said, we shouldn't. But I was not wholly convinced of my answer, and thus neither was Rex. You should go back to your room before we both do something we'll regret tomorrow. Are you sure? He said. Your wish is my command, but I'd like it very much if you changed your wish. I won't change it, I said. Think of it, though, he said. He raised his hands higher up my torso, the silk of my slip, the only thing between us. Think of the way I'd feel on top of you. I laughed. I will not think about that. If I think about that, we'll both be sunk. Think of the way we'd move together, the way we'd be slow at first and then lose control. Does this work with other women? I've never had to work this hard with other women, he said, kissing my neck. I could have walked away from him. I could have slapped him right across the face, and he would have taken it with a stiff upper lip and left me alone. But I wasn't ready for this part to be over. I liked being tempted. I liked knowing I might make the wrong decision. And it would absolutely have been the wrong decision, because as soon as I got out of that bed, Rex would forget how badly he'd worked to get me. He'd remember only that he'd had me. And this wasn't a typical marriage. There was too much money on the line. I let him flick one side of my slip off. I let him run his hand underneath the neckline of it.
Oh, what it would be to lose myself in you, he said, to lie underneath you and watch you writhe on top of me. I almost did it. I almost ripped my own slip off and threw him onto the bed. But then he said, come on, baby, you know you want to. And it became perfectly clear just how many times Rex had tried this before with countless other women. Never let anyone make you feel ordinary. Get out of here, I said, though not unkindly. But no buts, go on to bed. Evelyn, Rex, you're drunk and you're confusing me for one of your many girls, but I'm your wife, I said, with all obvious irony. Not even once, he said. He seemed to sober up quickly as if his hooded eyes had been part of the act. I was never really sure with him. You never knew exactly where you stood with Rex North. Don't try it again, Rex. It's not going to happen. He rolled his eyes and then kissed me on the cheek. Good night, Evelyn, he said. Then he slipped out my door just as smoothly as he'd come in. The next day, I woke up to a ringing phone, deeply hung over and mildly confused about where I was. Hello? Rise and shine, little bird. Harry, what on earth? The sun in my eyes felt like a burn. After you left the Fox party last night, I had a very interesting conversation with Sam Poole. What was a Paramount exec doing at a Fox party? Trying to find you and me, Harry said. Well, and Rex. To do what? To suggest that Paramount sign you and Rex to a 3-picture deal. What? They want 3 movies, produced by us, starring you and Rex. Sam said to name a price. Name a price? Whenever I had too much to drink, I always woke up the next morning feeling as if I were underwater. Everything looked muted, sounded blurry. I needed to make sure I was following. What do you mean, name a price? Do you want $1 million for a picture? I heard that's what Don's getting for the time before. We could get that for you, too. Did I want to make as much money as Don? Of course I did. I wanted to get the paycheck and mail a copy of it to him with a photo of my middle finger. But mostly I wanted the freedom to do whatever I wanted. No, I said, nope, I'm not signing some contract where they tell me what movies to be in. You and I decide what movies I do. That's it. You aren't listening. I'm listening just fine, I said, shifting my weight onto my shoulder and changing the arm that was holding the phone. I thought to myself, I'm going to go for a swim today. I should tell Louisa to heat the pool. We choose the movies, Harry said. It's a blind deal. Whatever films you and Rex like, Paramount wants to buy, whatever salary we want. All because of Anna Karenina? We've proven your name brings people into the theater. And if I'm being entirely clear-eyed about this, I think Sam Poole wants to screw over Ari Sullivan. I think he wants to take what Ari Sullivan threw away and make gold out of it. So I'm a pawn. Everyone's a pawn. Don't go around taking things personally now when you never have before. Any movies we want? Anything we want. Have you told Rex? Do you honestly think I would run a single thing by that cad before running it by you? Oh, he is not a cad. If you had been there to talk to Joy Nathan after he broke her heart, you'd disagree. Harry, he's my husband. Evelyn, no, he's not. Can't you find something to like about him? Oh, there's plenty to like about him. I love how much money he's made us, how much he will make us. Well, he's always done good by me. I told him no, and he walked out my door. Not every man would do that, not every man had. That's because you both want the same thing. You, of all people, should know that you can't tell a single thing about a person's true character if you both want the same thing. That's like a dog and a cat getting along because they both want to kill the mouse. Well, I like him. And I want you to like him, especially because if we sign this deal, Rex and I will have to stay married quite a bit longer than we originally thought, which makes him my family, and you're my family, so you're both family. Plenty of people don't like their families. Oh, shut up, I said. Let's get Rex on board and sign this thing, okay? Get your agents together to hammer out the deal. Let's ask for the moon. Okay, I said. Evelyn, Harry said before getting off the phone. Yes? You know what's happening, right? What? You're about to become the highest paid actress in Hollywood.
For the next 2.5 years, Rex and I stayed married, living in a house in the hills, developing and shooting movies at Paramount. We were staffed up with an entire team of people by that point. A pair of agents, a publicist, lawyers, and a business manager for each of us, as well as 2 on-set assistants and our staff at the house, including Louisa. We woke up every day in our separate beds, got ready on opposite sides of the house, and then got into the same car and drove to the set together, holding hands the moment we drove onto the lot. We worked all day and then drove home together, at which point we'd split up again for our own evening plans. Mine were often with Harry or a few Paramount stars I had taken a liking to, or I went out on a date with someone I trusted to keep a secret. During my marriage to Rex, I never met anyone I felt desperate to see again. Sure, I had a few flings, some with other stars, one with a rock singer, a few with married men, the group most likely to keep the fact that they'd bedded a movie star a secret. But it was all meaningless. I assumed Rex was having meaningless dalliances too, and for the most part he was, until suddenly he wasn't. One Saturday, he came into the kitchen as Louisa was making me some toast. I was drinking a cup of coffee and having a cigarette, waiting for Harry to come pick me up for a round of tennis. Rex went to the fridge and poured himself a glass of orange juice. He sat down beside me at the table. Louisa put the toast in front of me and then set the butter dish in the center of the table. "Anything for you, Mr. North?" she asked. Rex shook his head. "Thank you, Louisa." And then all three of us could sense it. She needed to excuse herself. Something was about to happen. "I'll be starting the laundry," she said, and slipped away. "I'm in love," Rex said when we were finally alone. It was perhaps the very last thing I ever thought he'd say. "In love?" I asked. He laughed at my shock. "It doesn't make any sense. Trust me, I know that." "With whom?" "Joy." "Joy Nathan?" "Yes, we've seen each other on and off through the years. You know how it is." "I know how it is with you, sure, but last I heard you broke her heart." "Yes, well, it will come as no surprise to you that I have, in the past, been a little, let's say, heartless." "Sure, we can say that," Rex laughed. "But I started feeling like it might be nice to have a woman in my bed when I woke up in the morning." "How novel." "And when I thought of what woman I might like that to be, I thought of Joy. So we've been seeing each other, quietly, mind you. And, well, now I find that I can't stop thinking about her, that I want to be around her all the time." "Rex, that's wonderful," I said. "I hoped you'd think so." "So what should we do?" I asked. "Well," he said, breathing deeply, "Joy and I would like to marry." "Okay," I said, my brain already kicking into high gear, calculating the perfect time to announce our divorce. We'd already had 2 movies come out, one a modest hit, one a smash. The third, Carolina Sunset, about a young couple who have lost a child and moved to a farm in North Carolina to try to heal, ultimately having affairs with people in their small town, was premiering in a few months. Rex had phoned in his performance, but I knew the movie had the potential to be big for me. We'll say that the stress of filming Carolina Sunset, of being on set and watching each other kiss other people, ruined us. Everyone will feel bad for us, but not too bad.
People love stories of hubris. We took what we had for granted, and now we're paying the price. You'll wait a little while. We'll plant a story that I introduced you to joy because I wanted you to be happy.
That's great, Evelyn, really, Rex said, except that Joy's pregnant. We're having a baby.
I closed my eyes, frustrated.
Okay, I said. Okay, let me think.
What if we just say that we haven't been happy for a while, that we've been living separate lives?
Then we're saying that our chemistry has fizzled out, and who's going to go see Carolina Sunset then?
This was the moment, the one Harry had warned me about. Rex didn't care about Carolina Sunset, certainly not as much as I did. He knew he wasn't anything special in it, and even if he was all wrapped up in his new love, his new baby.
He looked out the window and then back at me.
Okay, he said, you're right. We went into this together. We'll leave it together. What do you suggest? I told Joy we'd be married by the time the baby comes.
Rex North was always a more stand-up guy than anyone gave him credit for.
Obviously, I said, of course.
The doorbell rang, and a moment later, Harry walked into the kitchen. I had an idea. It wasn't a flawless idea. Almost no idea is.
We're having affairs, I said.
What? Rex asked.
Good morning, Harry said, realizing he'd missed a large part of the conversation.
During the course of making a movie about both of us having affairs, we both started having affairs. You with Joy, me with Harry.
What? Harry said.
People know we work together, I said to Harry. They've seen us together. You've been in the background of hundreds of photos of me. They'll believe it. I turned to Rex. We'll divorce immediately after the stories are planted. And anyone who blames you for cheating on me with Joy, which we can't deny for obvious reasons, will realize it's a victimless crime because I was doing it to you, too.
This actually isn't a terrible idea, Rex said.
Well, it makes both of us look bad, I said.
Sure, Rex said.
But it will sell tickets, Harry said.
Rex smiled and then looked me right in the eye, put out his hand, and shook mine.
No one's going to believe it, Harry said as we drove to the tennis club later that morning. People in town, at least.
What do you mean?
You and me? There are a lot of people who will dismiss it right out of hand.
Because
they know what I am. I mean, I've considered doing something like this before, maybe one day even taking a wife. God knows it would make my mother happy. She's still sitting there in Champaign, Illinois, desperately wondering when I'll find a nice girl and have a family. I would love to have a family, but too many people would see through it.
He looked at me briefly as he drove.
Just as I'm afraid too many people will see through this.
I looked out my window at the palm trees swaying at their tops.
So we make it undeniable, I said.
The thing I liked about Harry was that he was never one step behind me.
Photos, he said, of the two of us.
Yeah, candids, looking like we've been caught at something.
Isn't it easier for you just to pick someone else, he said.
I don't want to get to know someone else, I said. I'm sick of trying to pretend I'm happy. At least with you, I'll be pretending to love someone I really do love.
Harry was quiet for a moment. I think you should know something, he said finally.
Okay.
Something I thought I should tell you for some time.
Okay, tell me.
I've been seeing John Braverman.
My heart started beating quickly.
Celia's John Braverman?
Harry nodded.
For how long?
A few weeks.
When were you going to tell me?
I wasn't sure if I should.
So their marriage is
fake, Harry said.
She doesn't love him, I asked.
They sleep in separate beds.
Have you seen her?
Harry didn't answer at first. He looked as if he was trying to choose his words carefully, but I had no patience for perfect words. Harry, have you seen her?
Yes.
How does she seem? I asked,
and then thought of a better question, one more pressing.
Did she ask about me?
While I had not found living without Celia to be easy, I did find it easier when I could pretend she was part of another world. But this, her existing in my orbit, made everything I had been repressing come bubbling up.
She didn't, Harry said, but I suspect it's because she didn't want to ask, rather than not wanting to know.
But she doesn't love him. Harry shook his head.
No, she doesn't love him.
I turned my head and looked back out the window. I imagined telling Harry to drive me to her house. I imagined running to her door. I imagined dropping to my knees and telling her the truth, that life without her was lonely and empty and quickly losing all meaning. Instead, I said, "When should we do the picture?"
"What?"
"The picture of you and me, where we make it look like we've been caught in an affair."
"We can do it tomorrow night," Harry said. "We can park the car, maybe up in the hills, so Photogs can find us, but the picture will look secluded. I'll call Rich Rice. He needs some money."
I shook my head. "This can't come from us. These gossips aren't playing ball anymore. They are out for themselves. We need someone else to call it in, someone the Rags will believe wants me to get caught."
"Who?"
I shake my head the moment the idea comes to me. I already don't want to do it the moment I realize I have to. I sat down at the phone in my study. I made sure the door was closed, and I dialed her number.
"Ruby?
It's Evelyn, and I need a favor," I said as soon as she answered.
"I'm open to it," she said, not missing a beat.
"I need you to tip off some photographers. Say you saw me necking in a car up in the Truesdale Estates."
"What?" Ruby said, laughing. "Evelyn, what are you up to?"
"Don't worry about what I'm up to. You have enough on your plate."
"Does this mean Rex is about to be single?" she asked.
"Haven't you had enough of my leftovers?"
"Honey, Don pursued me."
"I'm sure he did."
"The least you could have done was warn me," she said.
"You knew what he was doing behind my back," I said. "What made you think he'd be any different with you?"
"Not the cheating, Ev," she said.
And that's when I realized he'd hit her, too. I was temporarily stunned silent.
"You're okay now?" I asked after a moment. "You got away?"
"Our divorce is final. I'm moving to the beach. Just bought a place in Santa Monica."
"You don't think he's going to try to blackball you?"
"He tried," Ruby said, "but he won't succeed. His last three movies barely broke even. He didn't get nominated for The Night Hunter like everybody thought. He's on a downward spiral. He's about to be as harmless as a declawed cat."
I felt for him in some small way, as I twirled the phone cord in my hand. But I felt for her much more.
"How bad was it, Ruby?"
"Nothing I couldn't hide with pancake makeup and long sleeves."
The way she said it, the pride in her voice, as if admitting that it hurt her was a vulnerability she wasn't willing to give in to, made my heart break. It broke for her, and it broke for the me of all those years ago who did the same thing.
"You'll come over for dinner one of these days," I said to her.
"Oh, let's not do that, Evelyn," she said. "We've been through too much to be so phony."
I laughed. "Fair enough.
Anybody in particular you want me to call tomorrow, or just anybody with a tip line?"
"Anybody powerful will do. Anybody eager to make money off my demise."
"Well, that's everybody," Ruby said. "No offense."
"None taken."
"You're too successful," she said. "Too many hits, too many handsome husbands. We all want to shoot you down from the air now."
"I know, dear, I know.
And when they're done with me, they'll come for you."
"You're not really famous if anybody still likes you," Ruby said.
"I'll call tomorrow. Good luck with whatever it is you're doing."
"Thanks," I said. "You're a lifesaver."
And as we hung up, I thought,
If I'd told people what he was doing to me, he might not have had the chance to do it to her. I wasn't much interested in keeping a log of the victims of my decisions, but it did occur to me that if I was, I'd have had to put Ruby Riley on the list. I put on a risque dress that showed just a little too much cleavage, and I drove up Hillcrest Road with Harry. He pulled over to the side, and I moved toward him. I'd stuck with nude lipstick because I knew red would be pushing it. I was careful to control the elements enough, but not too much, because I didn't want it to look perfect. I wanted to be sure the photo wouldn't look staged. I needn't have been worried. Pictures speak very loudly. In general, we can almost never shake what we see with our eyes. "So how do you want to do this?" Harry said. "Are you nervous?" I asked him. "Have you kissed a woman before?" Harry looked at me as if I was an idiot. "Of course I have." "Have you ever made love to one?"
"Once."
"Did you like it?"
Harry thought, "That one's harder to answer."
"Pretend I'm a man, then," I said. "Pretend you have to have me."
"I can kiss you unprompted, Evelyn. I don't need you to direct me."
"We have to be doing it long enough that when they come by, it looks like we've been here for a while."
Harry messed up his hair and pulled at his collar. I laughed and messed mine up, too. I pushed one shoulder off my dress.
"Ooh," Harry said, "it's getting very racy in here."
I pushed him away, laughing. We heard a car coming up behind us, the headlights shining ahead.
Panicked, Harry grabbed me by both arms and kissed me. He pressed his lips hard against mine, and just as the car passed us, he ran one hand through my hair.
"I think it was just a neighbor," I said, watching the car's rear lights as it made its way farther up the canyon. Harry grabbed my hand. "We could do it, you know."
"What?"
"We could get married.
I mean, as long as we're going to pretend to do it, we could really do it. It's not so crazy. After all, I love you. Maybe not the way a husband is supposed to love a wife, but enough, I think."
"Harry.
And what I told you yesterday about wanting a wife, I've been thinking, and if this works, if people buy it, maybe we could raise a family together. Don't you want to have a family?"
"Yes," I said, "eventually I think I do.
We could be great for each other. And we won't just give up when the bloom falls off the rose because we already know each other better than that."
"Harry, I can't tell if you're serious."
"I'm dead serious. At least I think I am."
"You want to marry me?"
"I want to be with someone I love. I want to have a companion. I'd like to bring someone home to my family. I don't want to live alone anymore. And I want a son or a daughter. We could have that together. I can't give you everything, I know that, but I want to raise a family, and I'd love to raise one with you."
"Harry, I'm cynical, and I'm bossy, and most people would consider me vaguely immoral."
"You're strong and resilient and talented. You're exceptional, inside and out."
He had really thought about this.
"And you and your proclivities, how does that work?"
"The same as it has with you and Rex. I do what I do, discreetly, of course. You do what you do."
"But I don't want to continue to have affairs my entire life. I want to be with someone I'm in love with, someone who's in love with me."
"Well, that I can't help you with," Harry said. "For that one, you have to call her."
I looked down at my lap, stared at my fingernails. Would she take me back? She and John, me and Harry. It could actually work. It could work so beautifully. And if I couldn't have her, did I want anyone else? I was pretty sure that if I couldn't have her, all I wanted was a life with Harry.
"Okay," I said. "Let's do it."
Another car came up behind us, and Harry grabbed me again. This time he kissed me slowly, passionately. When a guy jumped out of his car with a camera, Harry pretended, just for a split second, that he didn't see him, and slipped his hand down the top of my dress. The image printed in the papers the next week was tawdry, scandalous, and shocking. It showed us with swollen faces and looks of guilt, Harry's hand clearly on my breast. The next day, everyone was printing headlines that Joy Nathan was pregnant. The four of us were the talk of the nation. Unscrupulous, unfaithful, lustful sinners. Carolina Sunset set a record for the longest stay in theaters. And to celebrate our divorce, Rex and I shared a pair of dirty martinis. "To our successful union," Rex said, and then we clinked our glasses and drank.
It is 3 in the morning by the time I get home. Evelyn had downed 4 cups of coffee and apparently felt wired enough to keep talking. I could have bowed out at any point, but on some level, I think I welcomed the excuse not to go back to my own life for a little while. Being wrapped up in digesting Evelyn's story means I don't have to exist in my own. And anyway, it's not my place to go making the rules. I picked my battle. I won. The rest is up to her. So when I get home, I crawl into bed and will myself to fall asleep quickly. My last thought as I go to sleep is that I am relieved I have a valid excuse for why I haven't responded to David's text yet. I'm woken up by my cell phone ringing, and I look at the time. It's almost 9. It's Saturday. I was hoping to sleep in. My phone shows my mother's face smiling at me. It's not quite 6, her time. "Mom? Is everything okay?" "Of course it is," she says, as if she's calling at noon. "I just wanted to try and catch you and say hi before you headed out for the day." "It's not even 6 a.m. where you are," I say. "And it's the weekend. I'm mostly planning on sleeping in and transcribing some of the hours of Evelyn's recordings. We had a small earthquake about a half hour ago. Now I can't go back to sleep. How's it going with Evelyn? I feel weird calling her Evelyn, like I know her or something." I tell her about getting Frankie to agree to a promotion. I tell her that I got Evelyn to agree to a cover story. "You're telling me you went up against the editor-in-chief of Vivant and Evelyn Hugo both within 24 hours, and you came out getting what you want from everyone?" I laugh, surprised at how impressive it sounds. "Yeah," I say. "I guess I did." My mom lets out what can only be described as a cackle. "That's my girl," she says. "Oof, let me tell you, your father would be beaming right now if he were here. Would just be glowing with pride. He always knew you were going to be a force to be reckoned with." I wonder if this is true. Not because my mom has ever really lied to me, but because it's just so hard for me to imagine. I can see my dad thinking I'd grow up to be kind or smart, that makes sense. But I've never thought of myself as a force to be reckoned with. Maybe I should start thinking of myself that way. Maybe I deserve to. I kind of am, aren't I? "Don't mess with me, world. I'm out to get mine." "That's right, honey, that you are." As I tell my mom I love her and I hang up the phone, I feel proud of myself, smug even. I have no idea that in less than a week, Evelyn Hugo will finish her story, and I'll find out what this has all been about. And I will hate her so much that I'll be truly afraid I might kill her.